Good evening, this is Mark Lynch, and this is Inquiry. My guest tonight is Trina Orchard. She's an anthropologist and associate professor in the School of Health Studies at Western University. She researches and engages in activist debates about sexuality, gender, and health among diverse cultural and digital communities. Her new book is Sticky, Sexy, Sad: Swipe Culture and the Darker Side of Dating Apps. Trina, welcome to the show. It's a pleasure to talk to you about this book.
It's great to be here.
And I'm sort of smiling because this is written from your experiences. It's an autoethnography, as you write about it in the book. You really went through some amazing experiences. Now, there were some good experiences too. But as a person who's never used a dating app in their life, it's like put the fear of God in me. It's like, oh my God, thank you for doing this.
Yeah, I mean, that is the response that a lot of people have had to the book, whether they've used dating apps or not. Because for those folks who haven't used them, they're like, wow, this is a whole world we are so unfamiliar with. And for people who have swiped, they're like, thank you for documenting all the things that I have been feeling for years, but just didn't articulate in quite this way.
Well, it's amazing because this is how people meet and hook up today. An amazing percentage, and you quote it in your book in different places, are using dating apps, and there's a variety of them. You've used in the book, you use Bumble a lot. You use a number of other dating apps too. Is there that much difference between your success rate on them?
Well,
success rate is you get what you want out of it.
Do you get what you want out of them? That's a moving target.
Okay.
You know, I will start with Bumble. And the reason I started with Bumble in terms of my user experiences is because, hey, I'm a feminist. And hey, this app is marketing itself as feminist app because of this very specific design, which they changed actually April 30th, which is the day my book came out, incidentally. Their signature design up until April 30th of this year on the hetero version was where women could do the opening lines first and men had to wait to be asked. And that was sort of framed as an opportunity for women to take control and to have greater sort of decision-making power over how they were going to date online. Now, in my experience, almost half of my conversations on that app were ignored. And I think
so you got no response whatsoever.
No response whatsoever. I think because men maybe didn't like it as much as Tinder and some of the other ones, which were just much easier to begin the dating process. You didn't have to wait. And it just struck me as, wow, this is so ineffective. And also, it's the only app where, because of my low success rate, I began to like self-sexualize my discussions with people. What I mean by that is I would often include a sexier photo when I was doing my opening conversation as a way to like up the ante and like, well, maybe this will be, you know, get me more responses. It did sort of, but that really made me question myself as a feminist as well. And then on Tinder, in many ways, it's more equitable in the sense that no one has to wait to be asked by anybody else. And either party, as soon as a match is made, boom, you can chat or you can ghost or you can do whatever you're going to do. But no one has any barriers in the way.
One of the things I found really interesting about this book is you write a lot about how these experiences make you feel. And when nobody responds to your posts, how does that make you feel?
Well, it makes you beat yourself up. You know, it's like, well, am I too old? You know, because I was 45 when I began swiping.
And it's not that anybody's saying that to you. It's that you start doing that to yourself.
Well, it's the internalized dialogue that we have living in a patriarchal society, living in a society where we're told to work hard and you will succeed. Well, baby, I'm working hard out here.
So there must be
something wrong with me, right? And that's one of the reasons why I wanted to write the book, because it's like, you know what? It's not me. It is this broader cultural context, and it is the way that these algorithms are designed. It's also misogyny, et cetera. But I was really learning the hard way that don't beat yourself up so much about this. You are doing all that you can do, but you would still, I mean, I've certainly still oscillated between, you know, really high dopamine feelings of really real success and fun and stuff, but then also just the crickets and wondering why and trying to make sense of that on your own.
You also remind people several times throughout the book, realize this is a huge capitalist business. And therefore, it behooves the business to keep you on the line, to keep you searching, to keep you wanting to look more. And you got to realize, you got to factor that into how you feel.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's a lot of research about how these dating platforms and algorithms are essentially mini slot machines. And that, you know, yes, you are swiping, you're putting yourself out there, you have a good profile, your pictures are great, but you're not the only one in the game. You know, there is an algorithm there that is directing the nature of your romantic journey on these things.
Yeah, I think the quote from your book is, everyone is talking to a million people at once. So yeah. Everybody that you're talking to is talking to a million other people. So low expectations are your best medicine.
Yeah, I think that low expectations, especially for the current generation of dating platforms, low expectations, you know, schedule some swiping time so you're not completely at the whim of it, which I was. I was just all over the place almost all the time when I was swiping. I was just, you know, kind of a slave to the swipe, as it were, which is
slave
exactly
the
how the industries want me to be.
Let's talk about the selfie. I do digital photography all the time. I have never taken a selfie on purpose. On purpose. The selfie on dating apps is, and this is your phrase, is prime real estate. You got to really know how to do your selfies.
Yeah, you do. And a lot of people don't.
Are there like educational videos on this?
Oh, there are videos, there are dating coaches, there are programs, there are people who will do it for you. All these different industries have popped up around the different aspects of the dating app sort of situation as a way to outsource the labor. You know, you don't know how to write a profile, I'll do it for you. You just got to pay me this, right?
Right, so it's another business.
Right, exactly. And so, I mean, it's kind of fascinating and sort of to be expected, especially when you've been around for 10 years, 12 years, which a lot of the apps have been around for. But yeah, a lot of men in particular, I think, are not as comfortable taking selfies as women. I think that is part of it. And I think women just take a different kind of care in the presentation of self.
Right.
Some women, not
right.
all. And I think, you know, men typically socialize in groups, and so you'll often find like a group photo or, you know, a random kind of old picture kind of tossed in there, and it's like, no.
Also, a lot of men with fish.
Yes, the ubiquitous, famous fish photo, which, as I say in the book, I mean, it could be a proxy for a whole bunch of things.
Oh, yeah.
Talked about, right? But like I do say in the book, it's often one of the best photos in the sense that the guys are smiling, whether it's because they're making fun of you while they get, you know, posting this classic selfie, or because they just enjoy fishing, you know? Who knows?
A lot of when I read your descriptions of these selfies, so much of it's from the male side. Seems to be so self-constructing an image of masculinity mm-hmm. that they want you to buy into. And it just
yeah.
seems so artificial.
Well, it's a dating app.
So it's just as you sort of accept that going in, everybody, both sides, all sides, they're just creating an image of themselves.
Well, I think that's part of what we think we're supposed to do. These apps came in full force without any real accompanying discourse in terms of how to use them. What are we doing on here? How are we feeling about what we're doing on here? You know, it was just like, it's fun. It's great. Get on. it was just all the mayhem and popularity without that accompanying, this is how you might want to think about presenting yourself. You know, none of that really was there. All of those questions kind of came after when we're like, okay, what is this?
Now, I have to talk to you about dick pics.
About which?
Dick pics.
Yes. Okay. Mm-hmm.
You know, I knew that they existed, obviously, you know, but it just seems insane. It just seems, especially unsolicited ones.
Well, there's, okay, thank you for making that distinction, because sometimes if it is desired and requested, that's
you're right,
the situation.
And you do and you do participate in that.
Yeah.
But the idea that you would do that, I was a hippie. This still seems like insane.
Well, especially because they know that women do not want unsolicited dick pics.
So that seems violent masculine.
Yes, exactly. You know, and there is, I make some links between the dick pic and things like flashing or streaking in the 70s and 80s, you know, as a way that men would try to usurp and take control over public spaces where women are, literally through their bodies. But there is a violence to it, absolutely.
And they try to get you to participate.
Oh, yeah. I'll show you this and you show me that. I'm like, nobody. Like, you might be sending those things to everybody. And, like, is that even yours?
Right.
We don't know.
You don't know.
We don't know.
The whole thing, the whole impulse seems infantile.
Infantile. And, like, what is that shorthand for, dear? You know, and, you know, what are you expecting me to do with this? Mm-hmm. You know, it just raises so many questions. It's really bizarre.
So after you make this initial connection and then the person seems like they want to follow up on it, what's your next step?
You mean if they've begun with a dick pic?
Well, no. Let's take those off the table.
Okay.
And throw them away. What's your next step naturally if you sort of feel like there might be something that you want to connect with?
In terms of like when I'm using the dating app?
No. Are you into texting next?
Oh, yes. Well, it really depends. You know, I would often make the shift to texting on my phone really quick, which I wouldn't advise everyone to do because then the person has your phone number.
Oh,
right?
But
typically, if there is like a little bit of chemistry or curiosity, you know, you have a bit of banter back and forth on the app. But it's kind of like a double-edged sword because if you stay just on the app for too long and don't actually meet, chances are you might not transition to regular texting or another platform, and an in-person meeting becomes less likely. Whereas I found that typically when I would shift pretty quick off the app, because it's a bit clunky to use, I have to say, most of them are, shifting to the app, things felt quicker. And for me, it felt like a way that I could make my decisions more expediently, right? So I could get the vibe, get the communication would be quicker, and I can make my decision about, I'm going to suggest that we meet in person, or I absolutely have no interest in this.
The in-person meeting seems to have been key. You can tell an awful lot of person sitting down with them at a restaurant or wherever. How many times were you sorely disappointed? Like a lot, a little, or?
I would say, that's a good question. How many times was I disappointed?
You felt like the person, the real person that you're now sitting across from you, is the person that you met through the app?
Yeah, I would say maybe 35% to 40%, because you can have an interest and have a good rapport back and forth and just have a grand old time texting, or if you want to go, you know, sexting, whichever. But really, it's that sensory information that is the closer, you know, or just, you know, observing the way that they would communicate with me, whether they would talk over me or not talk at all or seem extraordinarily nervous. And then your question is like, well, would this ever progress to anything sexy? And like, do I want that? More than half of the time, I was happy or pleasantly surprised or not super turned off. So there you go.
What's some of your big red flags if you're meeting a person face-to-face?
Well, big red flags, take a look at their photos and see that, you know, because I was catfished a couple of times.
Ooh.
You know, are the photos of the same person?
Oh, God.
Because sometimes they're not. And it's like, okay, I think there's two different people being featured here. Which one's going to show up? You know, it was some lean times for me when I kind of ignored that red flag and then actually got catfished by the same person twice. That's all in the book. It's kind of a strange situation.
It is.
Yeah. I think, you know, other red flags are folks who seem really like hyper intimate from the very beginning.
Yeah. Those dialogues were very scrungy. I mean, it was, you wrote it all down in the book, and it was just like, whoa.
Yeah, and sometimes people call that love bombing, where it's like, oh, I can't wait to like tell my friends and family, you know, I have all these big feelings. I'm like, I don't even know you. Those kinds of things. And, you know, I think, you know, violent language, you know, sexist jokes, homophobic, transphobic jokes.
There's some guy that told you this, what was supposedly a joke about a female librarian.
Mm-hmm.
Which wasn't even a joke, really. It was just a misogynist statement. What the? I mean, do people not understand anything about contemporary life or what? I mean, I read that and it was like, it was cringeworthy.
Well, and it was so laissez-faire. He was so casual about it.
Well, that's the
right. Misogyny is running through these dating apps just like it's running through our society. And people know that it's not cool. But I think look at, you know, in terms of ramifications for bad behavior at the top of like the pinnacle of political power in certain very, very powerful countries, why would I even care if she doesn't like it?
Right.
Why would I even give it a second thought? Someone else is going to laugh at it. So, you know.
Well, that brings up an interesting point that you talk about in the book. Sometimes it seems like the men are actually really interested in hooking up. It just sort of seems like some of them were just into the performance online.
Yeah, and that was one of the weird things that I learned. It took me a while to figure this out. Okay, these are called dating apps. However, not everybody who is using them is actually interested in dating.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we're using them for all sorts of things, whether it's just you're bored, or you're waiting in line, or, you know, whatever, you know, commuting somewhere, or, you know, you have more sort of nefarious goals, like you're wanting to swindle people. Or you just kind of want to see who's out there and just play with people. That seemed to be very common. And I think there were a lot of people who were swiping, who wanted to date, but there was a lot of vulnerability, a lot of fear, a lot of lack of discussion about how to actually date online. And so they kind of reverted to this juvenile, often kind of like semi-violent behavior. So a lot of different range of activities that occur on these platforms.
You're listening to WISN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name's Mark Lynch. My guest tonight is Trina Orchard. She's an anthropologist and associate professor in the School of Health Studies at Western University. She researches and engages in activist debates about sexuality, gender, and health among diverse cultural and digital communities. And her new book, Sticky, Sexy, Sad, Swipe Culture, and the Darker Side of Dating Apps. So ultimately, when I read through this book, this has to give you ideas about what the current state of the idea of masculinity is.
Yeah. Yeah, masculinity, masculinity in and of itself is a misnomer because it's masculinities, right? There are multiple ways of doing manhood, and there are competing models, and a lot is changing in all of our lives, whether it's the very contested nature of feminism. Masculinity and masculinities are also equally contested. And I think we are sort of more inclined to talk about feminism and women's rights in some ways compared to men and men's rights and how men are doing. And we have lots of research about some of the more distressing aspects of mental health and self-harm that is quite common among a lot of men, not just young men, not just marginalized folks, but also people who seem, you know, influencers, celebrities. You know, we need to talk more about how men are doing and different ways of doing manhood so that people don't feel shame and so that they are feeling more confident and have more pleasure and more fun in what it is they want and how to go about getting it. So that was something really important to learn. And I care about men. You know, I don't like the way a lot of them were treating me, but that doesn't mean that I don't care about them. And my job as a scientist is to try and understand them, but also think about, you know, so what can we do better so that we all are, you know, because if we want an equitable world, a more equitable world, we cannot do it alone. Right? We need to be in partnership.
Towards the latter half of the book, you talk a lot and quote other sources about what this is doing to intimacy. I think you quote Sandra Dee Ritter, and who talks about the datification of intimacy. And there's a lot about that, about the sort of flattening out of experience and the servitization of sex and romance. Do you feel that's true?
Yes, I absolutely do. That's why Chapter 4 is called Copy and Paste.
Well, that was that's even a weird, really actual experience, not just an. you found out that people were essentially copying and pasting their profiles.
That's part of digital life, I think, you know?
Yeah, and I'm not so sanguine about that. It's like, oh, God, that was just crazy.
Right? Yeah. And, you know, I use copy and paste for the title of that chapter because it's something that we're all familiar with. You know, sort of a Word document comes to my mind anyways, you know. But copy and paste also in terms of the nearly generic or almost identical experiences that we can have using these same platforms. And that really came home when I was sitting in my office one day. A student was there. She'd used apps for much longer than me. I was regaling all of the terrible things I was experiencing. And she said, Trina, your experiences are identical to ours. And she's over 20 years younger than me. I thought, never in my life has my intimate experience been similar to anybody else. And this woman has a life that is nothing like mine. Well, how could this possibly be? And so the common denominator is the platform. You know, like Marshall McLuhan said many decades ago, the medium is the message. And it just prompted me to think about, so what are some of the long-term implications of this flattening out of diversity? And it's something that not a lot of other folks have written about. And so I think that's kind of a really unique aspect of the book.
Yeah. Talk to me. Are these apps addictive?
Yes, they are addictive. Absolutely. Because we get rewarded when we use them. And what I mean by that is the more you use them, the more likely you're going to be offered like the attractive matches. And when I would take a couple days off or even longer and I would open the app again, I would have all the people I've already said no to. Nobody new, nobody interesting, just sort of the leftovers, as it were. And so we're being punished. That's a very, very clear instance of how the algorithm is directing our romantic lives. And then also we get messages as users from the different platforms. So let's say it's 9 p.m., you know, a little text message will zing into your phone. Hey, it's 9 p.m. It's prime swiping time. Get out there.
Wow. Right. I read that throughout your book. So the app itself is constantly reminding you, you need to get in there and do it. You need to use it.
Yeah. Yes. And on Bumble, it's when it was designed where the women had to make the first move, you'd only have 24 hours. And so, you know, when it was like 12 hours and you know, if you hadn't contacted someone, there would be a little message like, you've only got 12 hours left before this match vanishes forever. That use of that fairy tale language forever, you know. So it's, you know, you're under pressure. How is that fun? That's not motivating, right?
Yeah.
Who's in?
There's a point, there's a little sort of a little interlude, I guess is the proper word for it, in the book when you travel to Sicily. It just seems like you had a great time. am I reading too much into it, or did it just seem...
No, dear. You read every word correctly. I had a blast in Sicily.
Everything sort of just was what you wanted as far as it went.
Yep.
It was exactly perfect. Is there a cultural difference in the way that people are using these apps?
I don't know if there's a cultural difference in the way people are using them. I think there is a cultural difference in terms of sexuality.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that made all the difference. And also, I was there for a good time, not a long time. So I didn't have these kind of, you know, larger motivations like, oh, I'm going to, you know, wanting to find a partner right now. Like, it's like, this is for FUN. And, you know, being a foreigner, blah, 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 you have a little bit sort of cachet. But it really, like you say, it was fun. It was relaxed. It was sexy. It was fun. There wasn't a lot of time. I didn't spend a great deal of time on the apps, in part when I was in Sicily, because English wasn't always a common language that we shared extensively. And you know what? Sometimes you don't need it, clearly. Right? And I went with the flow. I took some what you could call calculated risks. You know, I didn't feel like I was putting myself in harm's way terribly. certainly not compared to the way I used to live in the analog days before I got sober. I mean, you want to talk about harm's way, you know, that was a very risky point in my life. Whereas in this, you know, I'm sober, they're sober, you know, we're kind of on the same page in terms of what we're looking for. And we just went for it.
We just have a few minutes left. Is it possible to redesign these apps so they are better for everybody involved?
Absolutely it is.
What would be some of the recommendations?
Well, one of the recommendations would be to have different people in the creative seat. So not have the Zuckerbergs, have a more representative, inclusive collection of people thinking about different kinds of things that users want based on what we know. Also, what do we like and what do we not like about the current apps? You know, have a way to enforce more safety as well as security so that the bad behavior, the unsolicited dick pics, the real violence that can also occur through these apps is mediated in a more consistently stringent way. And I think it would also be cool to have on the platforms a way for users to chat with one another, not just with prospective matches. So a kind of like a little community, you know, bulletin board type of thing where you could chat about fun things we're doing in this city or, you know, watch out for this person. I do know that, you know, this one has sort of raised some red flags for me, et cetera. So there's lots of ways that we can make it better.
We're completely out of time. This was, for me, a really eye-opening book, and I really relished reading it. My guest tonight is Trina Orchard. She's an anthropologist and associate professor in the School of Health Studies at Western University, researching and engaging in activist debates about sexuality, gender, and health among diverse cultural and digital communities. And her new book, Sticky, Sexy, Sad, Swipe Culture and the Darker Side of Dating Apps. Trina, it's been a pleasure.
This is a great conversation. Thank you.
You're listening to WISN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name's Mark Lynch. Good night.